I think that last song, Brother Richie, and the last verse of it, though you didn't plan it that way, expresses the thought of the evening and captures the excitement of the beginning of new things. This mid toil and tribulation and tumult of her war, she waits the consummation of peace forevermore, till with the vision glorious her longing eyes are blessed and the great church victorious shall be the church at rest. That captures the excitement of new beginnings. And I want to talk with you about it just for a few moments tonight. And for those of you who are looking for the title that was in the bulletin, I don't want to confuse you. That's why I wanted to announce to begin with that that's not what we're talking about tonight. From the time that God expressed, I think, genuine joy over a job well done at the beginning of a brand new universe, a brand new earth, a brand new creation, when he looked over all of it at the end of the sixth day and said, that's real good. You can see and sense the excitement of new beginnings. And Adam joined him in it as he saw Eve coming toward him and exclaimed, finally, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And I think Adam sensed the excitement of something brand new that was coming. And it was good. From that point until on down through time, as sin bore down on man and became such a weariness, until Ecclesiastes cried out in despair that there's nothing new under the sun. On down through time until the Athenians found that they actually did nothing but sit around and tell or hear something new. Until today when somebody says, hi, what's new? We all have this curiosity for that which is new. And we all sense an excitement and an anticipation of something good that's new. And that's the way it ought to be. We sense the excitement of new beginnings. A new house. A new daughter-in-law. A new kitty cat. Did you ever get a new kitty cat? Yeah. Or a new puppy dog or a new whatever. Friends, you all here tonight, many of you are, though by this time you should be fairly well settled in, you're still establishing new relationships and new friendships, and you found perhaps a new love. Isn't that exciting? Is there anything more exciting than a new love? Puppy or otherwise. If it's puppy love, fair enough. It's real to the puppy. And it's exciting. There are lots of new babies in our midst. And what excitement that brings. Especially if they're new grandbabies. And I guess there ain't no way for there to be a new baby without it being somebody's new grandbaby. So there's a lot of excitement always about new babies. A new university has been born right under our nose this year, and we're the first year of that enjoyment, and it's an exciting year. And those of you who graduate this year, you will be the first graduates of the new university. And those of you who are freshmen this year are the first freshmen of this new university. And we're all looking forward to the opening of the new Benson Auditorium. Won't that be a day? It will be. You sound like you don't expect it to happen. It's coming. And it's going to be an exciting time when 3,500 people or more cram into that great, big, huge new auditorium and honor a man who richly deserves it. I think all of us enjoy new things, except new blue jeans. Nobody likes new blue jeans. yig. They're so stiff you can't sit down. That's, you know, they're just not very good new. But everything else is pretty good, brand new. And there's just a sense of excitement about it. Or the word good news. Can you think of anything more exciting than for somebody to burst into your room and say, "Man, have I got some good news." Well, and everything just tingles up and down your spine. You know, you're sensing something is really good to be called good news. Do you remember the story told in the Old Testament, recorded in 2 Kings? There was such a dark, gloomy picture of the Jewish nation. They were besieged by the Syrians and had been besieged for so long that they had begun to eat their own children. And that gruesome story is the backdrop to this one. Two women had each a child. And they agreed to kill one of their children and eat it that day. They had become so hungry. And so whichever one it was, the lot, that she took her son and they boiled it and ate it. And then the next day they were going to eat the other child. Sounds unbelievable. It sounds actually not even true. But you'd have to be in the state of famine they were in to be able to understand it, I'm sure. But when it came time to eat the second child, the mother wouldn't allow it. She hid it. And the woman went to the king and said this gruesome tale and brought it out. But it's in that context that you find these four lepers sitting at the gate of Jerusalem. And in that dark background, you find them saying, something's got to be done. They were dying. They said, if we go back into the city, there's nothing there. If we sit here, we're going to starve to death. Let's go over into the camp of the Syrians and see what happens there. So they did. You know the story. Paul Faulkner referred to it during the meeting. They got over there, and in the night, God had caused a rustling to be heard, and it sounded like chariots and horse hooves, and the Syrians had fled and left everything strewn from there to the capital, Damascus. And had left all the food and all the good things that had been abandoned. Well, they were all there. And these men became so excited. It was just tremendous news for them. And they went from one tent to the other, putting on garments and clothes and loading their pockets with money and just eating themselves until they were just gorged. They just ate until, and then they began to realize that one of them's conscience pricked him. And he said, "Wait, this is a day of good news. And if we wait to tell it, it's going to be bad. Let's go tell the king's household." And my, you're talking about good news. This was a concept. This was a whole. It was not just things, though things were involved. This was something greater than things. It was the accumulation of all these things that meant this was the end of the siege. It was over. And all the trauma and all the death and all the stench and all the starvation and all that went along with the siege that took place when armies besieged cities, it was over finally. And when these four lepers came and said, "The siege is over, the Syrians are gone," cautiously, they sent out someone to check it out. But boy, when that was confirmed, that the Syrians were gone and they'd left their garments and they'd strode their weapons from here to Damascus, those men who came out to check it out came back and said, "It's true." And the people became so excited, they rushed through the gate with such enthusiasm, they trampled upon the very man that was the gatekeeper and killed him. It was such good news that this bad news actually came out of it. But that was because the man had doubted the word of the Lord. He wasn't to eat any of that. The people were just overwhelmed with the good news. The siege is over. Can you sense that? Have you ever been that hungry? I doubt that you have. And then there was a day when, in the blackness of human history, when people were probably at one of their lowest ebbs, and the vandalism of the Jewish nation and the robbery and the oppression by the Romans and the poverty of the ordinary citizen of Israel, and the despair and the confusion and the expectations that had been put off for so long and hopes that had been dashed, and the waiting and the waiting and the waiting. And it's in that background that you find an angel from the Lord coming to this young woman and saying, or coming to the shepherds really after they'd gone to Mary, at the birth of this young Jewish child, he said to these shepherds, he said, "Behold, I bring you good news." Good news of great joy. Boy, and you can just hear all of a sudden from the portals of heaven the anthems of praise that it said joined that announcement. Angels by the myriads burst out in an anthem of praise when this good news was announced. For it says, "There is born to you this day in the city of David a Savior, Christ the Lord." And these shepherds got so excited, they ran to the next city, they ran to Bethlehem, and they went in to see if they couldn't confirm this good news. And they found it just like it had been told them. Good news. Well, the term good news plays a large part in the New Age. And the excitement of it is that which accompanies it. The excitement of the good news is one of the evidences of the presence of the good news. The good news, for example, in Matthew 4, where Jesus, it was said there, he began to preach the good news. And some translations just translated gospel. But I'd like to clarify something tonight that, and I don't know whether this is 100% true or not, but I think it is. Every time the word gospel appears in the New Testament, it's simply translated from the word euangelion, or a form of the verb euangelizomai, or something that has the word euangelion in it, the good news. And I'm not real confident about where the origin is for the word gospel. I've heard that it comes from two words, Godspell, but so what? You know, that still doesn't really communicate good news. So I would like to urge you, whenever you read about the gospel, simply know that it comes from this word, good news. Good news. And so it is in Matthew 4:23, and in Luke 4:18. Jesus there in the synagogue in Nazareth, when they gave him the scroll to read, and he read from Isaiah, and he read where this was his mission, that the Spirit of the Lord is upon him, and he had been anointed to preach the good news to the poor. That's the first thing that it says he was to do. He was to announce good news to the poor. And that's an exciting thing. Here they were, so downtrodden and so oppressed. And one of the first things that the Messiah was to do, he was to announce good news to the poor. And then it spread from there. And he sent his disciples out to preach good news. Good news. And in a time when it was so drastically needed, so desperately needed, here these men went out from this man preaching good news. And how beautiful were the feet of those people who came proclaiming good news. And then when he sent them out into the world, he said, "Go preach it. Go preach the good news to the whole world." When Philip sat down with the eunuch in that chariot, it says he told him the good news about Jesus. And when Paul later wrote to the Corinthians, he said, "I make known to you the good news that I proclaim to you." Good news. Now, I want to ask you a question, and then we want to draw a conclusion, and I want to drive home something that I believe will be meaningful to you. What is there about it that is so basically good that makes it good news? What is the essential characteristic of the news that makes it good news? What is the essential characteristic of it that makes it so exciting? It is exciting. What is there about it? What is really the essential quality of it that makes it so exciting? That which causes the excitement of the good news, I believe, is it has to do with new beginnings, all right. But not new beginnings in the sense of creating something new out of nothing. The new beginnings that we're talking about here has to do with the renewal of ruptured relationships. New babies are fine. But the reconciliation of a man to his wife is something else. A new kitty cat is good. But the new relationships, the renewal of ruptured relationships, the word in the New Testament that's used is the word reconciliation. Reconciliation. Which means simply to restore or renew to friendship. And I suppose that to us that would be more meaningful than redemption. To a slave, if you'd been bought and someone had owned you for years and years and years, and you had been redeemed by someone, I'm sure that would have been a tremendous excitement to you. Someone has bought you. And to the black race, no doubt the concept of redemption, of being freed to where we're free. To the Jew who had been set free from Egyptian bondage, no doubt the concept of redemption, of being brought out and of being freed from slavery, no doubt that would have been exciting to them. But for you and me today, I suspect the most exciting aspect of the gospel, of the good news, is that aspect of it that deals with relationships that have been restored, renewed. Ruptured relationships rebuilt. And in it we see God as the God of the second chance. Do you know what that means to you and me? The God of the second chance? The God of the second chance 100 times over? We're talking about the excitement of new beginnings. Most of all, the new beginnings of a second chance. And listen, it runs all the way through the whole New Testament. All of the relationships that Jesus had with people, they have this exciting quality of newness. You think about it. And all of these associations of his, they were relationships. New relationships that spoke of new beginnings, new hope, new joys, newness. All of them had that. And it begins all the way from the time that he first met James and John when they said, "Sir, where are you living?" And he said, "Come on and see." And they spent the day with him. Oh, from that point on, it's like a powder keg being ignited with a match. Andrew went out and found Peter. He said, "We found the Messiah." And the other disciple went and got another one of the men. Who was it? Nathanael. Went and got Nathanael and said, "We have found the Messiah." Eureka! And the excitement of this new discovery just reeks and drips and it explodes out of this word, Eureka. Eurekamen is the Greek word for it. Eurekamen, we have found the Messiah. And there's just such an excitement. Old Nathanael tried not to get too excited. He said, "Well, can any good thing come out of Nazareth?" And then the fellow said, "You just come and see." And from that point on, it was just one new excitement and one new relationship after another. Until he found the woman at the well. Oh, the black background of that relationship, of her life. 5 husbands living with a man now that wasn't even her husband, just living with him. And Jesus sat there and gently opened up this new beginning. New beginnings. New relationships. She ran back in the city so excited. She said, "Come quick. Come and see a man that told me everything I've ever done." And they came out like Jesus described them, as a great big white field full of wheat ready to be harvested. Brand new beginnings. And you just take it on down through as you hear him talk to Nicodemus. We'll come back to that in a few moments. And as you hear him as he walks through the lives of people. And you see him in John 8 as he talks to the woman taken in adultery. Here she was living an old rut of sin. Spoiled, ruined, trodden upon, taken advantage of. The same old story, the same old failures, the same old disappointments, the same old being ripped off, the same old being taken advantage of, both by people who were lying in bed with her and by those who were setting it up so they could catch her in order to trap Jesus. Same old religious people. Until Jesus hit the scene. And then it split wide open. And there it left her there by herself with the crowd, but her accusers were gone, the old had passed away. And he said to her, and it, watch it, as he just cracks the window now and lets in this new air and the freshness of it, he said, "Dear lady, where are your accusers?" And for the first time in her life, she could say, "Lord, I don't have any." And all of a sudden, there opened this window, and he says, "Neither do I accuse you. Now, you go on and don't you sin anymore." And you just sense the tingling excitement of brand new life, brand new page, brand new opportunity. And you see him lift her gently up to a brand new plane of living and send her off with the excitement of newness. It's all through here. All through it. And I keep telling these stories, but I keep running across and I keep finding new things. And old Zacchaeus, the fellow, I've told you the story so many times, but there was something new there. There was a new association. There was a new friendship. He had found a new friend. And the language there says, "Today, salvation has come to this house." Brand new. Zacchaeus stood up and said, "I'm going to give half my goods to feed the poor. And if I've defrauded anybody of anything, I'm going to give it to him fourfold." Jesus said, "Today, salvation has come to this house." Brand new salvation. And even down to the thief on the cross. The thief on the cross sensed something. And though it was the darkest hour in the human history, the thief could perceive that he perhaps was standing at the very threshold of a brand new era. And he looked intently at Jesus and asked him, "Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom." As though he were peeking up over the hill and seeing in advance the coming of something grand and glorious and new. And then Jesus turned to him and said, "Today, you're going to be with me in paradise." A whole new newness of life. Well, it's that sort of thing that it is so exciting about the good news. I'd love to just talk to you about and tell you, and we will through the year. We're going to be talking about all these people that he came to know and who just grew up like they'd been put in a hothouse and or an incubator, and they just shot up because there was something new injected into their life. New hope where there was no hope. New life where there was no life. There was life when Jesus stepped in. And he just simply walked in like the King of glory, walking through the portals of glory. "Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lifted up your everlasting doors, and let the King of glory in." Sure enough, in he came, and everybody he touched was new. The woman who had the issue of blood was made new. The little child, 12 years old, the daughter of the centurion, or the daughter of the nobleman, she was made new. Mary and Martha were made new. Lazarus was made new. You think of some. They're just standing there on the threshold of your mind waiting to jump out and say, "Yeah, and what about so-and-so? And what about her? And what about him? And what about the little children? And what about his concept of women that caused them to stand on the verge of a brand new era?" His way of treating women was unheard of. New. And it not only created excitement, no doubt it created trepidation or just... whatever, in the hearts of people, those who hated him just despised him for it. And they saw the coming of this new era as a gloomy forecast of doom for them, as the Pharisees and Sadducees and rulers stood there and reminded me of them standing up on one of those flat roofs watching the great triumphant procession as Jesus marched in through the Golden Gate on that Sunday before he was crucified on Friday. One of those old sour pusses said, "Look, the whole world is gone after it. We can't do anything." What were the people doing? They were so excited. They had taken off their clothes and had thrown them in the way, their coats, and had put them on the road. They had cut down branches out of trees. And they were yelling, "Hosanna to the Son of David." And these old killjoys said, "Jesus, stop these people from saying all this." Jesus turned around and said, "I'll tell you what, you stop them and the rocks are going to start crying out." There was that much excitement about his being here. Well, so much is this true that the statement in Revelation 21 where Jesus said, "Behold, I make all things new." That was a statement of he assessed what his job had been. And he says, "I make all things new." I think the joy of what I'm talking about can best be captured by the parable of the prodigal son. You know when he came back home and the father ran to meet him? As this relationship was to be reunited now, it was to be mended, it had been ruptured. As he came back to meet him, he ran to him and kissed him, fell on his neck and kissed him. He was so thrilled, and you began to sense the excitement that's coming. But that's not all of it. Boy, he took him back. He began to give orders, bring a new robe, bring a new ring, bring new shoes, put them on him, go kill that fatted calf. And then they began to play music, they began to dance. In our culture, it sounds odd that the Lord would talk about dancing, but the man over there, they did a jig when this boy came home. The excitement, and you can almost hear it, and Lord forgive me, but what I hear is Arabic music. And that doesn't sound too good to me. All the squeaking and the squawking of the woodwinds, and it's awful. But boy, to them it sounded tremendous. Here they were, just all of this whooping it up because this boy had come home. But then the old sourpuss came in and said, "What's going on?" And they said, "Your brother's come. He's alive. He's back home." But he wouldn't go in. And you know, one of the greatest and most obvious evidences of the fact that this boy never really was a part of the kingdom of God is indicated by his sourness in the midst of all the joy of the new relationship that had been established. The fact that he couldn't enter into it with real excitement and joy is an indication he never was really in the kingdom. He missed it. Well, these are some things about the joy and the excitement of new beginnings. It's there. I talked to a man up in Maine this last week. I guess it was on Friday, Saturday morning maybe. He was about 82 years old. He said, "I've been a Christian for 2 years." He said, "These 2 years have been the happiest years of my life." And big old tears came in his eyes. 80 years, and then 2 years. He said, they're the happiest years of my life. And four of you girls here at Harding College are calling him every month. You should have heard him talk about it. He said, "I have a whole brand new family." Newness and the excitement of it. It was something to behold, to watch what this old man was experiencing, because some of you dear ladies have adopted him as your grandfather, I guess. And he said, "I have a whole new family." And boy, was there excitement in that. Don't miss the kingdom and its newness. And don't miss the excitement that goes with it. Oh, Nicodemus came to Jesus and he said, "You know, we know that you're a teacher come from God. Nobody could do what you're doing unless God be with him." And Jesus said, "Nicodemus, unless a man's born anew, he can't enter the kingdom." And Nicodemus said, "How is that possible? How can a man be born when he's old?" Some of you may be thinking, that sounds good for other folks, but how can a man be born when he's old? How can a person be born anew? It sounds good for other people, and the excitement and the joy of new beginnings and fresh starts and clean consciences and all, but that's not for me. I don't think I'll ever enjoy that. Oh, but you can. It's waiting on you. If you come to him in faith, it's waiting. It's there. And Nicodemus went away not really realizing that it had already begun in him. He didn't know it. He said, "I don't understand." Jesus kept explaining it to him step by step. And he finally concludes by saying, "I just don't understand." And he left, not realizing that the very thing that Jesus had talked about had already been started in him. Because 3 years later, we find him and Joseph of Arimathea, a rich man there, taking the body of Jesus down and laying him in a tomb. Nicodemus was there. It had already begun because Nicodemus had become one of his disciples. Well, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. Listen to him as he talks about newness of life. He says, don't you know that all of us who were baptized into Christ were baptized into his death? We were buried with him, therefore, by baptism into death, and like as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we also might walk in what? Newness of life. There it is again. Newness of life. And then listen to this description as we close. And you may want to turn to it, or you may just want to sit and enjoy this reading. Listen. Revelation 21, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared like a bride, adorned for her husband. Listen to all these new things. New Jerusalem, new heavens, new earth, new bride. And I heard a great voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling of God is with men. He will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them. And he'll wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be any mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. Behold, I make all things new. Roy Taylor is experiencing that. Listen to this. Harriet Beecher Stowe, she grasped the meaning of this newness and the excitement of the new age and of the resurrection age when she wrote this poem. Still, still with thee, when purple morning breaketh, when the bird waketh and the shadows flee, fairer than morning, lovelier than daylight, dawns the sweet consciousness I am with thee. Alone with thee amid the mystic shadows, the solemn hush of nature newly born. Alone with thee in breathless adoration, in the calm dew and freshness of the morn. When sinks the soul subdued by toil to slumber, its closing eye looks up to thee in prayer. Sweet the repose beneath thy wings o'ershading, but sweeter still to wake and find thee there. So shall it be at last in that bright morning, when the soul waketh and the shadows flee. Oh, in that hour, fairer than daylight dawning, shall rise the glorious thought, I am with thee. Do you sense that excitement of new beginnings, of a brand new dawn, of a brand new morning, of a brand new and never-ending eternity with him? It's there. And it can start now with you if you want to be a Christian. So enjoy the newness, enjoy the freshness, enjoy the excitement of new beginnings, whether it's new relationships here with your friends or with your mother and father, with your new wife or new babies or whatever. Enjoy it, but enjoy the relationship that makes good news the good news when we've been restored to God's friendship and have been made all new. If any man is in Christ, he's a new creation. The old things have passed away. Behold, all is new. We're going to sing this song of encouragement. You may want to express your faith and be raised to walk in newness of life from the waters of baptism. If you do, we urge you to do it now while we stand and sing.